Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
We got the Professor John. The week three of preseason starts tonight in earnest. Got any underlying storylines? Do you expect any guys and seen anybody that you expect to be on the outs that might be a surprise in terms of cuts or trades?
No, I think it's the same as we've been talking about for some time. You know, I think there was at one point about a week or two ago when he had about 3 days where he was pushed to the ground that Barkevious Mingo you thought might be in trouble, but there's no way that can happen because they need his versatility, his pass rush, and his talent. So I don't see anything there. Clearly, you can look at the receiver position. You got, if they're going to keep six, there's four guys battling, and you know we've talked about those four. But I don't really see any surprises right now. I think that again, it's still going to be tough decisions. Maybe when you start sorting out the running backs, that could be one that might be a little bit jumpy because you figure that this is probably going to be it for CJ Procise. I think that has run its term and all that stuff. And, you know, it's going to be the fact that J.D. McKissick's going to be out there battling. But, no, I don't really see any real surprises right now.
What would you do if CJ Procise went out and just lit it up against the Chargers in the third preseason game? Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd go, you know what? That's why they've been keeping him around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's just been really frustrating with him.
Has to be.
J.D. McKissick, though, I feel like he's got a pretty good beat on having a roster spot. You agree?
I think so, yeah, because you know that they don't want to try to, particularly on kickoffs, have Tyler Lockett out there too much. I mean, no, I think he's going to be doing all the punt returns because he's so good at it. Never dropped one. He's real smart. He knows how to make the fair catches and not get hurt. So I think he'll be doing the punt returns and occasionally doing kickoff returns. But I would have to think that McKissick, as one of the fastest guys in the team, is still probably one of the best returners.
Who's been a player? We talked today to Will Disley. Mm-hmm. Just fantastic kid. Who's been maybe your top couple of interviews that you've done during this camp?
Well, Disley, I know I talked to him before, and he was really good. I tell you what, after the game, it was a short interview, maybe about 2.5 minutes, but Delano Hill was real good. I mean, talking about the 3 months he kind of spent on his back because of the hip injury, really couldn't do too much. I thought he was really good. Ugo Amadi, who I talked to today on today's show, he's kind of delightful. But it's really a good group. I mean, there's good quotes and good anecdotes and good stories.
I like that description.
Delightful.
Delightful.
I was going to say
very nicely done.
And I think it totally applies because Ugo Amadi, he is a delightful person. He's really fun to talk to.
Yeah. He is.
You getting the feeling, though, John, that even though Amadi's in the mix, that Jamar Taylor, he's getting the start Saturday against the Chargers, that he'll be starting at the nickelback spot there against Cincinnati as well?
I say that, not before he plays, because if he has a bad game, then that could change. But I think right now you can see he's emerging as the number one guy. But I know that as you look over time, at some point, I think Ugo Amadi's going to take that over. Now, maybe it's going to be next year. You know that Pete Carroll's already said that he's going to maybe do some rotation with that, but I think overall, I think that's the encouraging thing that you can see is that Jamar, I think, and particularly when you look at the beginning of the season. All right, now Andy Dalton's coming in without a lot of weapons and offensive linemen, and that's a home game. But then you look at the fact you're taking on two Hall of Famers in Ben Roethlisberger and also Drew Brees. I mean, do you really want to expose a young guy making a new start? I think having Jamar Taylor probably would be the smartest thing as long as he plays well in that game tomorrow.
John, have you seen the quotes that came out of Dallas today involving Tyrone Crawford?
No, I did not.
Okay, so Tyrone Crawford, he's a defensive defensive end, right?
Defensive tackle.
Yeah, defensive lineman, and he was he's talking about a bar fight in Florida, and I want to read the quote because it's reminiscent of one of my favorite quotes ever given by any Seahawks player. "I'm going to let God take it," Crawford said Thursday. "I can't speak on it too much. I'm going to let God take it and handle everything. However it works out, it works out. Hopefully they see my side." And it made me think of Bruce Irvin after he was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks and he was asked by an event that resulted in him getting arrested. And he responded that it was all in the Lord's plan, if we have the sound of Bruce Irvin talking about that.
Wow. It's like interesting. And of course, I mean, that bar fight, they're still waiting. They had him on PUP because he had, I think, a hip surgery or something like that. And remember, this is a $9 million defensive tackle. You know, I'm kind of wondering if he gets suspended, if he's going to have trouble making the team, because now they had to pay, you know, $12.75 million for Jalen Smith. And, you know, it's going to be over 30 for Dak Prescott. I don't know if those numbers all fit, but yeah, not a good thing. So, I mean, it'll be God and Jerry Jones that'll be handling that.
Here is Bruce Irvin.
No, actually, they did arrest me. They did arrest me, but, man, you know, it should have been a citation. But like I said, I'm not going to get into the details. The Lord knew it was all BS, you know, like I, you know.
Wow.
It was the details of the police report, too. It was what he did was there was a PETA, like a Euro delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Car that drove by him, and he like jumped up and knocked a sign off of it.
Wow,
that's what he did. It was a pita pit delivery, and here was what he had to say.
No, actually, they did arrest me. They did arrest me, but man, you know, it should have been a citation. But like I said, I'm not gonna get into the details. The Lord knew it was all BS. You know, like I, you know.
I think we
I'm
need
sure
to
that's a term that the Lord would use, but
we need to have a T-shirt made of that, right?
Oh man, that was one. I think we turned to each other at that point and said, "T-shirt,
yes,
definitely a quotable T-shirt."
One for the ages, that's for sure.
Wow. All right, Professor, here's what we got here, and Jim and I were. It was dangerous that we thought so much alike, but top five Seahawks right now, and so I'll just read mine: Russell. Then Bobby, ranked 1 through 5. Russell, right. Bobby, Dwayne Brown was number 3 for me.
Okay.
And then Chris Carson, then Tyler Lockett. What says you, Professor? Would you switch around Lockett and Carson? Because I know Danny,
yeah, well,
Tyler
I don't know
Lockett
if I'd
is
have,
3.
Because, I mean, you know, I still go, it's like, you know, Lockett, Dwayne Brown, Lockett, those would be the top 4. And then you're looking for 5. Yeah, I mean, because I think you look at the Chris Carson has to be a consideration. Then you know, because again, you look at the Pro Bowl guys that could be Pro Bowlers or developing like that. You know, because Carson would be in the mix, and
KJ Wright, Michael Kendricks, either of those guys jump up to you as the top
not,
five.
Not no, I think that the Carson might be up there. What about Bradley McDougal? I mean,
yeah,
he's got to be in the mix, too.
I had him 8th.
You had
I'm
him 8th?
I'm not sure where you guys had him, but, you know, but I had Jaron Reed, number 6, KJ Wright, number 7. You know, I put Disley as number 9. I just think he's going to be a really good tight end. But, you know, and then we're sort of excusing Dixon here. Jim, where'd you have Michael Dixon?
I got Michael Dixon at number 8, John.
Number 8.
Oh,
wow.
Here's
that's
what,
pretty high.
Here's what an opinion is on that list.
The Lord knew it was all BS.
What, for Michael Dixon?
At number 8, the 8th best football player. He's a punter.
How many All-Pros did they have on the team last year?
Two.
Bobby
and
Wagner?
He was one of them. And what's now, you can add that Jason Myers is on the team.
That's
now.
True. That's so, true. There's
very good
pro bowler.
This is an interesting one. John, where would you put Ziggy Ansah? We haven't seen him practice.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably got the best body of work when it comes to being a defensive end. We're not sure what entirely to expect of him. Where would you rank him among the Seahawks' best football players, 1 through 20?
Well, I mean, if he is the Ziggy that is healthy and does some things like he has in the past, I mean, I think you'd have to put him number 5. I mean, because, again, he's been to the Pro Bowl. He has been, he can be good for a double-digit sack season, and if that's the case, I mean, he could really do a great job for this team.
Well, you know what? That's exactly where Jim Moore had him. Does that make you feel better or worse about your pick as him at number 5, that you're on the same page with the go-to
guy?
No,
I feel good about it. I mean, why would, just because Jim says it, what makes you think he's wrong?
His history.
Thank you, John.
Everything that he's said over the past 6 years.
I love
on
the
him.
Professor.
It's Jim, John. Yeah. That's why.
I love you, John. Yeah, no, I was. That's exactly what I was thinking about Ansah because of his history. And you look at him, he's one of the. I mean, if he has a good season, John, he's in line for a huge payday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it won't be here, but there would be someplace else, and they would get a third-round compensatory. That's why, you know, I keep on saying, like, when everybody talks about Jadeveon Clowney and whether they should make a trade like that, and you figure that the Texans will want a second-round pick, you know, if Ansah does well and Clowney does well, you know, both are going to command any like Ansah, because he's a little bit older, might have to take like 15 or 16, and Clowney will be like 20 to 22, and so you just can't do that. And so what I look at is that both guys will be gone for third round compensatories. And of course, then, you know, you don't want to sign anybody in free agency because you lose those picks. But now you would have so much ammunition to be able to move up and in that first round, get the defensive end of the future.
What do you think will happen Saturday night if Geno Smith has a bad game, John? Because Lynch is coming off a bad game. Do you think they'll look elsewhere for a backup quarterback or let it play out against Oakland?
I think they let it play out against Oakland because I think they like both quarterbacks. I mean, you can see that Geno has the experience and he's been in the system now for the offseason. You know, Lynch offers probably more of a higher level if he can get well. And of course, he had a real good game to start in the first preseason and then a not a good game in the next one. But no, I think you would have to look at, you know, just staying with the guys that are there because, I mean, what's going to be available on the street that might be better? And he comes in not knowing what to do.
What in the name of Daryl Henley is going on with Patrick Chung, Professor?
Well, I mean, apparently he got caught for cocaine possession.
Yeah. You know what they say about cocaine?
She's a bad lady. She ain't got no legs.
Yeah, that's...
That was Charlie Jackson used to say that.
Not a good thing, that's for sure.
Yeah, we haven't seen the cocaine thing
seems
in a while.
Have fallen out of favor. That's
now he has a hearing on the 28th of August, and you know, they delayed making a charge on him, and then they came back today and did the indictment. And so you'd have to wonder, because what I would have to think is going to happen, you know, on this short term, they would probably have to put him on the exempt list.
It's interesting because the other thing that you could do is if he plays the legal case out, it might not be resolved until the spring, in which case he can probably play in the interim, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It also happened in New Hampshire, which I found to be odd. Patrick Chung owning a place up in New Hampshire. But maybe I'm selling the great state of New Hampshire short.
You might be.
Yeah. Maybe it's a nice place to vacation.
Isn't that like a place, maple syrup?
That's Vermont.
Oh.
Hippies and maple syrup come from Vermont. New Hampshire's known for Mount Washington. He's got a big, tall mountain.
Might
maybe
not be far
cliffs.
From Boston. He can probably commute from there.
Probably.
Yeah. I think it's. I don't know if you want to commute from New Hampshire. Maybe you could commute.
No,
from would
Providence. The thing might, is, would the policeman be able to take him back to New Hampshire?
Yeah, that's true.
John, what do you? How long far away are we from a shortened preseason? Do you think?
You would have to think that you might have to wait till 2021, but I sure hope it's going to be 2020 because, and you know, I think there can be some momentum there. Now, again, I think everybody agrees, you know, there should be two or less. Again, where I look at it on the revenue side of it, you're still having to replace somewhere in the neighborhood of $350 million league-wide for each game, you know, because you got tickets, sponsorships, you've got the premium seats and television, and so all those things have to come into play. But let's say you cut down, you know, 350 taking it down to three games, and then what you do is you get add a couple playoff games. I mean, if you really want to overdo it, you can add, you know, like four playoff games. That would be, you know, more than between, you know, $400 and $500 million, and so, you know, you would be able to replace what you lose in the preseason, but they've got to do something. I mean, this is ridiculous.
You know, I'm in the minority on this. I like preseason football. And if you're a really good fan, you know you're not going to see Bobby and KJ and Russell because you know what they can do, but you get to see all the young guys go out there and battle. And if I think you're a good fan, that it's interesting to see a guy like Cody Barton or Marquise Blair or Rasheem Green. So yeah, I don't think
it's
that
like,
bad.
But again, it's like, do you really want to pay $106 per ticket to see that? I mean, you know, if not in most of
that might be on the low side too.
Oh yeah, no, I'm just talking about on the average price, and that doesn't include the premium seats and all that. I mean, that's why I think it's. I mean, it's not. You could say to a certain degree, it's a ripoff. I mean, in the NBA, they naturally complain about when the stars sit out in a game and you're on the road, and it's like, hey, we paid top dollar for this, and we're not seeing LeBron James, we're not seeing some of the top players. Well, in this case, I mean, you're seeing nobody. I mean, you're seeing guys that really should be fighting for jobs in a dual practice someplace as opposed to something that is going to be there. So, no, I think that we've now reached the stage where they've got to shorten it.
John, is there a game that sticks out for you tonight that you'll be paying close attention to? I was thinking maybe Green Bay-Oakland, or is there another one that you're looking
at? The only thing I want to see in the Green Bay-Oakland game, if anybody showed up. Because, I mean, what, they only sold like 9,000 tickets as of 2 weeks ago. I don't know if they're going to have anybody else in the house, but, you know, that thing looks really bad.
That also sounds about like the attendance that we saw in Tampa Bay, right? when the Rays
7,500 there for the Mariners Rays.
Yeah, absolutely brutal that we were seeing.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, that's but no, I think that kind of looking to see. I think Carolina's going to play with Cam Newton a little bit tonight. That could be interesting.
John, long term, are the Chargers going to fit in Los Angeles? The league seems bound and determined that that's the market that they're in. They're not selling out their home stadium, and it's significantly smaller. They're a good franchise.
Right.
What do you think the long-term future for them is?
Well, I mean, they're going to move into the stadium, but the revenue is not going to be as good as they were hoping. You know, they've already lowered the estimates on the revenue that the Chargers are going to get by $150 million, and they just haven't. And I don't understand why. I mean, you know, I know L.A. is front-running. You know, they like having the, they like winners, but this is a team that won 12 games. It's got Phillip Rivers. It has one of the best rosters in the National Football League. And, you know, you go to the StubHub, and it looks we're looking forward to seeing that on Saturday. If there's going to be more Seahawk fans than Charger fans.
Now, hear me out. I know this is going to sound crazy, but just hear me out. Maybe Los Angeles isn't the best market for pro football, given that they've had two franchises before that have moved away.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're just going to put two franchises back in there again and expect. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing and expecting different results?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think that having that second move, but then certainly it helps out the owner of the Rams, who put up all the money to be able to build the stadium, and so now he gets relief from Dean Spanos. But it's not a good situation for the Chargers, and you wonder, once they move into the new stadium, and I hear they're already having trouble selling the luxury boxes, they're having trouble getting PSLs and all that. Rams didn't have any problem. I mean, the Rams have the history there, but right now the Chargers don't.
Hey, this is huge news for the Chargers, man. I mean, I thought maybe they'd be them or Indianapolis be contending for the AFC Championship. But Derwin James headed to injured reserve, man. I mean, that guy was such a good player as a rookie. He's not going to be back till November?
2 months, yeah. At least 3 months is what they're saying.
Wow.
I mean, that was a really bad injury. And, I mean, you're talking about probably one of the better safeties to come into the league in the last several years. I mean, he was an all-pro. He was a pro bowler. I mean, he was great. And now he's, you know, going to have maybe just one quarter of the season to be able to do some things. So that's a big blow. And then, of course, you look at the Melvin Gordon situation. That's not getting any better. He's still holding out. Russell Okung, I mean, don't you have to think that Russell's going to have to hang it up?
He's got something going on with his heart. Is that right?
Well, no, what it is he's got, I think it was an embolism or whatever you call it. And so he's on blood thin medication. He has to probably stay on for a long period of time. I can't imagine in a physical sport where you have to use the blood clot medicine that he has, because, I mean, how dangerous is that? Because, I mean, if he gets cut, there's going to be even worse bleeding. I mean, this is not good.
Professor, there's a mediocre receiver back in the NFC West, Michael Crabtree, signing with the Arizona Cardinals. What do you think of Crabtree's career there in Phoenix?
Well, it's going down. I'm still kind of amazed he hasn't reached the stage where he's just getting minimum salary. I mean, the early word in the contract, even though, again, it's probably a little overblown, is about $3.25 million on a one-year deal. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he kept on making it to a point where, you know, each step he goes lower down in the NFL scale, and now he's getting a little bit older. But they wanted a split end, and because of a couple injuries, and, you know, what I thought was amazing is, how about the career of Kevin White, you know, who opened up the roster spot being cut? Because here's Kevin White, a guy that was the seventh pick in the draft by Chicago. He ends up signing for a one-year deal at 1.4. The Bears didn't even want him back, and now he's out in the he gets cut.
Yeah, he was the seventh overall pick, and he played five regular season games in the 5 years that he's been in the league.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how little he played. I think it started his rookie year when he had like stress fracture or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I guess the stress right now is the general manager who drafted him.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's not Ryan Pace, though. Or is
no,
it Pace?
No, it's, I think it predates Pace.
Okay.
Yeah, I listened to you and Sean Salisbury this morning talking about, should we maybe pump the brakes on just entirely dumping on Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean, look, now all of a sudden, because what was he, like 1 for 7?
1 for 6 for 0 yards.
0 yards.
Got picked off. He had a 0 quarterback rating.
Right. But, I mean, look, the Patriots thought he was good, and, you know, he's looked good. I know he hasn't played in a lot of games, and I do think that there's some overhype on Jimmy Garoppolo. He's still got to prove it, but, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like the guy is just terrible.
No, but I think that, you know, he's still coming off a major injury, coming off an ACL. His mechanics certainly not looking good right now, and that's expected because, you know, all he does, you know, when you're coming off an ACL, all you're doing is rehab, particularly if you're a quarterback, so you're not working on the mechanical things that you need.
Not as much, anyway, that's for sure. And then, you know, you guys were talking a little bit about Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of feel sorry for him?
I do. Well, what I feel sorry for is that, you know, here's the Red Rifle. He goes to five straight playoffs. That's pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
win, but...
and then, of course, it didn't. Well, Marvin Lewis was there, 14 years, went to seven playoffs and didn't win. So I guess they're, you know, they're in good company. But what I look at is that, you know, 1 year they let his two of his best three receivers go, Mohamed Sanu and also Marvin Jones, in free agency. And then the next year, his two best offensive linemen. And that Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler. And remember, they drafted a first and a second round pick. And, you know, they both ended up going to different teams for the minimum salary. And so it's like, you know, he was robbed of four starters on offense. And he's the one to have to try to make that all work. Not easy.
Professor, what's next for James Williams, do you think? He was cut by Kansas City, I don't know, a month ago or whatever it was, and then he signed with Indianapolis, and so all of us Cougs fans are excited for James Williams, and then 48 hours later he's cut by the Colts. You see a future for him with another team?
No, not much. I mean, when you start to see him getting, you know, released twice and not getting a chance, it sounds to me like he may have to be looking over. I mean, maybe lucky to get a practice squad gig, but if not, he's probably maybe looking to have to go to the XFL.
Yeah, the XFL. That'd be an opportunity. The Dragons, or maybe the Roughnecks, could be the Guardians.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know, though. I don't know if their nicknames are as good as the USFL nicknames. USFL had some good nicknames. The Tampa Bay Bandits.
The Bandits, yeah, that was good.
I enjoyed that. The Oakland Invaders, they had a fantastic helmet with a hand holding a lightning bolt.
What was Michigan?
Michigan Maulers?
Were there generals? Maulers. There were generals, weren't there?
Actually,
yeah,
I think
New Jersey Generals.
It's the Pittsburgh Maulers, and it was the Michigan Drive.
Drive.
Yeah. Denver Gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They had some good solid
nicknames. They had some good ones, so no question about it. But you can see the kind of like a medieval type of theme to a lot of the names of the XFL teams.
Oh, I see a little Dungeons and Dragons or Game of Thrones type action. Professor, we always appreciate it.
Okay.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
If you missed any of the cold hard facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. Download the podcast, 710sports.com. Ziggy Ansah, he was probably the most polarizing player in our list of top 15 Seahawks. Also, where should Justin Britt factor in? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's a happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB. That's brown sugar bourbon. Want another code word? Let's give you that opportunity again. Head to 710sports.com/win and enter the code word WIN, W-I-N, WIN, by the end of our show to be entered to win two tickets to the August 29th Seahawks preseason game. They're hosting the Raiders. Remember, the code word will expire when our show ends. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. Two players in our list of 15, the top 15 players. We did a secret ballot before the show started. Myself, Jim, Dave, and Jessamine. We've run through all the list. There's two guys that I wanted to debate their inclusion on it. The first one is Justin Britt. Now, Britt was ranked as high as 6th. That was on Jessamine's ballot. As low as 21st, which was on your ballot, Dave.
Well, you had him 6th, Jess.
He is
going to be
a leverage beast up front. And I just think that the ability to get penetration up front is going to be one of the most important things. So when it came to the two quarterbacks of the team and Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, and then probably the most effective offensive player outside of Russell Wilson will be Tyler Lockett. Then you got the guy, it'll be the guy protecting Russell Wilson, which is, I don't have my list in front of me. I just know where my prioritizations were. It basically, pass rush or, you know, the defensive line came in there. I was like, well, I need someone there, and I think he's going to be the most important of those people. And Jaren Reed comes into play a little bit later on my list, but the fact that he's missing 6 games, I couldn't put him that high.
Britt is a very interesting player. 2 years ago, we saw him as having a breakthrough, right? Mm-hmm. He had found a spot. He didn't really have a home before that and became an all-pro or a Pro Bowl alternate. Last year, I think everybody looks and we thought the offensive line was better. He's definitely a part of the personality of it. That question of how good a football player he is, I think is going to come into clearer focus this year. He's a very, he would be one of the more interesting players on this team this upcoming season because I think it's going to have a lot to say about his future.
Well, I think he's a really good football player because he went from tackle to guard to center. So I think that indicates he's a good football player. I don't know. I guess I just kind of discounted the offensive line just because I don't really like offensive linemen that much.
Yeah, but not, they've got one of the better lines in the league now.
Yeah, run wise. Well, look, I had Dwayne Brown at third.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if anybody else did.
Jim did.
Yeah,
you and Jim had very similar lists.
Yeah.
Well, who's better, Yupati or Britt? Because I put Yupati at 11.
See, well, don't you also think that, like, gosh, the health thing has to factor into it, too?
Yes. I think Britt's significantly better than Yupati. I didn't have Yupati in my top 15 because I don't expect him to play most of the season.
Yeah, Yupati has 3 Pro Bowls under his belt.
Yes, he does.
I mean, I take exception to significantly better than Britt.
Well, how about just better?
I'm going to agree with Jim on that one.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah.
Hey, you guys are just two peas in a pod today.
Yeah.
Go together like peas and carrots.
Yeah. We didn't do it 10 through 15.
That steams my beans, Dave.
It's just one bean, Danny, oh, that gets steamed.
It's just one bean. Yeah. That steams
Please
my bean.
Please keep that singular.
Yeah. Who have you got, Dave? So we're going through the top 15 Seahawks on the roster right now, yeah. and we got through 10. Who do you have? I've got Puna Ford at 11. You got Puna there at 11?
He was copying off of me.
Do you have Puna at 11?
I do. Well, did anybody have Will Dissly as high as 9? I had him 9th.
That was the highest he was. I had him as 10.
Yeah.
Trey Flowers had him 19 because he hates Huskies.
Yeah. Trey Flowers I had at 10. 11 was Puna Ford. Michael Kendricks I put at 12. I probably should have had him higher because I think he's a really good football player. I rounded my top 15 out. Jacob Martin, Cody Barton, and Marquise Blair. Anybody have rookies on their top 15 list?
I got Blair at 13 and Amadi at 15.
You got Amadi in there. That's not a bad choice.
The interesting thing about Seattle's rookie class is right now, their top 3 draft picks, none of them were practicing. Blair's been out with back spasms. We haven't seen Collier since the first week because of the ankle injury. And then you've got DK Metcalf having undergone knee surgery.
How come none of us have Metcalf in the top 15?
Because he's undergone knee surgery. And I already thought, I wouldn't have put him in the top 15 even had he been healthy.
Do you put him, top 30?
Maybe. I think he's going to catch fewer than I think he'll catch fewer than 22 passes. I think I've gone from 25 to 20. I think 20 passes is about what I'm expecting from him.
That'd be great. If you can get 20 out of him, that'd be really good, I think. I mean, Jerron Brown, that's the one that you want to see get, you know, he had 19 last year. He needs to have 30, 35. So, yeah, I mean, but DK Metcalf, and same thing with Ziggy Ansah, which, Jess, I think you were talking about him a little bit also when you were talking about Britt, but I just haven't seen him, you know? And that's the reason why I don't think I have him in my top 20.
Boy, you look at Ansah, though. I'm looking at his stats right now. 2015, when he was healthy the whole year, 14.5 sacks. 2017, playing in 14 games, 12 sacks. Now last year, only 7 games, 4 sacks. So if you get 10 games out of Ziggy Ansah, I think you can pretty much count on 7 or 8 sacks anyway.
Where did I have him? Like 17th?
He was outside the top 15 on your ballot, my ballot, and Dave's ballot, and Jim had him 5th, which I'm not convinced that Jim might be right on that one because he's got the best track record of any pass rusher on the team. We know how important pass rushing is. He's actually a little bit ahead of schedule in his recovery from what we thought when the team signed him. We thought he might not even be ready for the first game, and he's out there practicing. It looks like he is going to be ready. It's hard to know what to expect with Ansah. To me, Britt and Ansah are the two guys with probably the most potential and the least certainty in some ways of how good that player is going to be. If Ansah plays up to what we've seen from him, I mean, he's been a franchise tag player before and can be a real difference maker. And Britt was on the verge of making the Pro Bowl a few years ago. I really think it's interesting just how much opinions on those two vary.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I should have given Britt a higher rating because of my favorite play of the season last year when he hit Aaron Donald all the way out by the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
And then Aaron Donald put his helmet on and went over to Justin Britt, wanted to fight him afterwards.
Took his shoulder pads off, which might have been to hide his jersey. Do you think he was trying to be anonymous?
Oh, did he have just his T-shirt on?
Yes.
His shirt underneath?
He took off his jersey, which I can't figure. Would that be an advantage in fighting, is to not have your shoulder pads?
Well, I mean, they have them taped down so tight now, they're hard to grab anyway. But, you know, he put his helmet on wisely.
Right. And then outfitted himself to go back out. But I wondered if he was trying to, you know, like how people in a riot situation will kind of like put a handkerchief around their face so you can't recognize them. He was eliminating all distinguishing material when he was going out for the confrontation.
I think he's a pretty identifiable character.
Aaron Donald, yeah, yeah. You're probably not going to miss him.
Who have you got 11 through 15, Danny?
My 11 through 15 in the list, I go with 11 was Britt. 12 was Shaquille Griffin, which might have been too high. I had him just ahead of Trey Flowers, who I had at 13. 14 was Rashad Penny. And 15 was Michael Dixon.
You were ripping my list, and that's your 11 through 15.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I think Rashad Penny at 16.
Yeah, I think your list is fairly terrible, and I think that mine's significantly better because I have Michael Kendricks at 5, and Rashad Penny, I do think, is in the top 15 players on this team.
Well, Jim has some biases because he just wrote a article ripping Rashad Penny, and he loves punters and kickers.
I didn't really rip him. I just kind of said how I felt about him.
Okay. And and what was the other thing that we had that he...
Why are those two things mutually exclusive?
Oh, he thinks Michael Kendrick should be in jail.
So, well, he should be.
No, he should.
Things. Yes, he should.
No. Why should he be in jail?
Well, because of what I read on the internet. Precedent. Other cases that were similar to his,
that
people went to jail.
Yeah.
I did. I got Myers, the kicker, at 14.
Yeah. Two guys that are only technically, in strictly technical terms, football players. We'll keep counting down our lists. Is Seahawks running back Rashad Penny a bust? ? There's a way to find out, Jim says. That's the headline. It sounds like you ripped him.
I didn't write the headline.
It sounds like you ripped him.
I didn't say he was a bust.
Okay.
I just have questions about him, and I don't think he should have been drafted in the first round based on what we've seen from him.
Since he arrived last year as a questionable first-round pick, Penny has been a disappointment. Sure sounds like you're ripping
him. Okay, now this is when you guys bring up that. Remember that one run that he had when he did a misdirection and he went cut across the rest of the way and then he fell down at the end? Go ahead. You want to say that now?
No.
Well, it just wasn't just that play. What about down in L.A. when he went over 100 yards?
Okay, what if you took those?
Catch the ball.
Okay, yeah, he did have that one good game.
But if you didn't know anything about Penny's draft history, you'd think he'd have a hard time making the 53-man roster based on preseason results thus far.
Do you guys really think Penny's that good?
Yes.
I do.
Why?
Because I think he's that good. I saw that one run against the game in Green Bay that we were just talking about where he reversed field.
Travis Homer's going to run for more yards than Rashad Penny this year. How's that?
Well, there's some things I would say if we didn't have a different directive on this show now. It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. It's time to sweep the dial. Coming up next.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Somebody said that in passing, you know, one of the, I hate cats, you know, somebody really hates cats. I mean, and a credit to cats, the ability to generate that much animosity, you know. And I'm not sure how close of a relationship some of these people are planning to have with a cat or why they would value the opinion of a cat.
Wait a minute. I'm confused. Does he like cats?
I think he doesn't have any issues with cats, and he doesn't understand why people hate cats.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a cat, it doesn't sound like.
I would agree with that. I don't understand why people hate cats either.
He's got a cougar named Sharon, by the way.
Yeah. I can understand preferring a dog to a cat, which I do.
You can have both.
Yeah, I don't dislike cats.
Our cat always goes over and rubs up against Hoover, and he kind of sniffs him, doesn't really pay attention to him. Our cat... You know, cats hunt for sport.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. My cat will come and jump. Anytime you're laying in bed or on your back, he will come and jump up on top of you, stand on your chest and, like, rub his head against your... He likes my beard.
Aw.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really nice...
Kind of cute.
Awesome. Yeah, he's a cool cat. They're very
affectionate. You should create a competing podcast called Meow.
Yeah. Take on Jim.
Yeah.
Thank you, C. Raj. You want to produce it for me?
Sure.
Meow.
We'll start it
out
that way.
Shut up, C-Rod.
That's awesome. And then you know what I can do? Every time we interview somebody, I'll say, hey, do you have any cats? Okay, well, I'm just asking because I have a podcast called Meow. You can find it anywhere on Stitcher or wherever you find podcasts.
It's actually Bark.
And then I'll also
the second season
I'll
was released yesterday.
About Stanford football. Hey, do you know I went to Stanford? Yeah, Stanford football.
Second season, seven new episodes. You can get it, Stitcher and whatever Wyman was saying there. I like cats. Cats are okay. You care what I think about cats?
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you hate cats?
They're okay, but if you can have a dog or a cat, I think it's pretty clear-cut that dogs are more fun than cats.
Dogs take a lot more work, though.
Cats are pretty self-reliant.
Yeah, they're self-reliant. You can leave them home for 3-4 days, fill a big water bowl, give them the cat litter. They go in the cat box. I mean, the dog is way, way more useful, though.
I think it's cool when cats make that sound, though, when they're upset. They kind of go...
You ever see hissing? That? I don't like that. Yeah, that's no good.
You like that, Danny?
I did.
For Patrick individually and how you feel about the player individually, obviously there's the human element to it. I mean, that sounds like a big deal, and without having any other information, you know, I don't want to go any further down this road, but that's a big deal that the people who are responsible for Patrick being on this football team, Mr. Kraft, you know, Jonathan Kraft, Bill Belichick, Nick Caserio, I mean, it's something that, you know, from a personal perspective, you sit there and you go, you kind of just move forward. I mean, next man up is what everyone has to deal with. But this sounds...
What? That was some of the most nonsensical... I like Lewis Riddick a lot.
What was he talking about?
He was talking about Patrick Chung being arrested for cocaine, which seems to be a much more straightforward than talking about the person and then addressing him as Mr. Kraft, which, why are you calling him Mr. Kraft? Call him Bob. You don't work for him. You don't have to call him Mister. Just automatically call him Mister because he runs a franchise. Next man up. What?
Yeah, that was.
That was confusing.
It was confusing, and you're right. Lewis Riddick does a great job.
I love Lewis Riddick.
What's this about a break-in?
Oh, is that what it was? Somebody broke in and found
an alarm was tripped at the Chung residence,
and then the cops came, and then they found the cocaine.
Came. Exactly. Oh, that's how it happened.
Oh, so this is kind of like who's your guy, or the machine gun guy, and the weed?
Evan Longoria.
Evan Longoria.
It is. Evan Longoria. I believe he was living with, who is the pitcher, David Price at the time. And they reported a theft at their house. And among the things stolen were an AK-47.
And?
A bunch of weed.
Whole bunch of weed.
A bunch of weed.
Large container of weed.
I was asking Evan about all of that when he was coming up to the plate.
You weren't exactly asking him. You were screaming it at him.
Weed?
In a heckling way.
Did you catch his attention? Did he glare at you?
He never acknowledged.
Of course not.
To do that would be to admit defeat.
But Dave was amused, probably.
I knew he could hear me.
Yeah. I was most amused by Danny's one stupid heckle was, who was the outfielder? Steven something from
Steven
up here?
Steven Sousa from Everett.
He's from Everett. And so somebody up in the crowds was just like constantly, Steven! Steven! Like he was going to look up there and go, hey, how you doing? And so all of a sudden Danny, being the parrot that he is, just started mocking him and screaming out, Steven.
It was really obnoxious.
It was really funny.
You were sober.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, no, that was back in the drinking days.
I don't think I was drunk, though.
You sure about that?
No.
I mean, it's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow. You know, obviously, you want to come away with a win. You want the team to win. One bad pitch in the ninth inning. We battled back, got a run. Trainers had a good at bat, and then I give it back in the ninth. It's kind of one of those games. I think you had a feel for that early on, and I don't blame anybody but myself. I think I could have done a better job executing a pitch there in the ninth inning.
Justin Verlander loses a game 2-1. He threw a two-hitter. The only two hits he allowed were two home runs. Lost the game 2-1.
Historical game, too, Danny. You enjoyed that.
No.
I was going to ask you about that because I saw that they won. Was that like the biggest
Detroit won.
Money line?
5-1. But it's plus 500, I think, for the Tigers.
It's the second time that's happened in a month involving an Astros game. Previously, it was Astros-Orioles. There's no such thing as a huge upset, a historic upset in baseball betting. These teams lose all the time to bad teams.
Why can't you do that, though?
What?
Because, like, in football, in the NFL, if there's a 17-point underdog, we call it one of the biggest upsets ever.
Because that's a game that people are actually betting on. This is an advertisement for sports books that are trying to get people to bet.
Guaranteed people bet on that game last night, though.
Maybe.
No.
Not that much,
guaranteed.
Though.
Guaranteed.
Like,
if you're usually betting, like, $1,000 a game, you'd put, like, $100 on that one.
Do you ever see on ESPN.com in the headlines over at the right side talking about the historic upset in a football game? No. They never run that sort of story. They never run that sort of story. And this is the second time in a month that's happened with an Astros game. It's because sports betting's become illegalized. And they're trying to promote the idea that casinos want out there, which is like, ooh, you can win big because historic upsets are happening in baseball. It's baseball. It's baseball. These things happen all the time. All the time the best team loses to the worst
team.
Well,
and the story, though, from last night, Justin Verlander refused to talk to a Detroit Free Press reporter because he said he was unethical behavior in the past, and so they made a big deal out of it, and the newspaper's upset. And
The newspaper should pipe down.
Yeah.
The idea that, as a grown man, that choosing to not answer questions within earshot of another grown man is not a compromising of the Bill of Rights or the freedom of the press. Like, you have a right as an adult to say, I don't want to talk to that guy, and I don't want that guy to listen to what I have to say. And instead, the Baseball Writers Association is like, well, he didn't allow access to the clubhouse. Like, they're essentially arguing for an HR policy of baseball that they have to answer questions. It's like complaining that Justin Verlander won't let him play with his Legos. He won't share his Legos with me. He wouldn't let me in the clubhouse to do that. Such whiny little babies that carry notebooks.
They did let him in once Verlander spoke, so he had access to all the other players, too.
But Verlander was already done. He didn't let me hear what he had to say.
Yeah, I don't know what caused all of that, but I'm not going to stick up for the reporter in this one.
Oh, really?
No. Oh, wow.
I thought you were going to. I was really kind of baiting you to try and do that.
Like, if they ever shut me out of a clubhouse and said, hey, Jim, you can't come in, I just would say, all right, I'll go back to the press box. And
I thought you were going to say, I would understand. I would understand why.
I thought he would say that was never going to happen because I don't go in there anymore.
Do you think reporters want us bothering them at their cubicles? I don't think so. I mean, I really don't. I like thinking back to the 1940s. Here I go with the good old days. I wasn't even alive then. But they used to write stories without getting quotes from the players. And everybody, I mean, I think it was okay back then.
Why try hard?
the whole song and dance with questions and answers after the games and stuff, I understand.
It's now you've gone too far, Jim. Now you're undermining the actual practice of being a reporter.
What? No, I don't really want to go in there and bother those guys anymore. I used to, and I used to think, even when I was covering the Sonics, I used to stand there and look at those doors and go, okay, come on, Jim, you can go in there and bother Gary one more time, you know, and I knew he didn't want to be bothered, or, you know, Sean was cool, but he had his headphones on, I didn't really want to bother him, but when you're a beat guy, you have to do that stuff. I don't know, just go to break, because I have no idea what I'm saying right now.
Will Disley's joining us next. That wraps up the Happy Hour, which is brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSP Brown Sugar Bourbon.